In the Moment on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 20th through 22nd in Brookings.
Music and poetry to make your day a bit better. From SDPB, this is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, a listening experience featuring former U.S. Poet Laureate Ted Kooser, followed by a Summer with the Symphony offering. First, we surface from the In the Moment archives a rare interview with poet and Pulitzer Prize-winning Kooser. The former U.S. Poet Laureate, who's now 85, discusses the work he feels is left to be done, and he performs a poem about a garbage hauler and a symphony of flies. Then, the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra performs movements 3, 4, and 5 of Gustav Mahler's Symphony No. 3, and Maestro Delta David Geyer recalls a meeting with Leonard Bernstein and the pain woven into Mahler's composition. That's all ahead on today's In the Moment News is First. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Today on the program, poetry and music. Yesterday, we heard from the current U.S. Poet Laureate, Ada Limon. Today, we surface from the archives one of America's most beloved top poets, Ted Kooser. He was Poet Laureate from 2004 to 2006. Now, Kooser was in Brookings in 2016 for the South Dakota Festival of Books as part of a South Dakota Humanities Council celebration of America's Pulitzer Prize recipients. I sat down with him there.
I don't know what's out there ahead. You know, I think I'll probably just keep doing what I'm doing, which is one poem at a time. You know, that's all I want to think about is that one poem. You know, I want to do whatever I can do to create something that will endure beyond me. To do a drawing or a painting or a poem that might have a chance of surviving me a little bit, you know, is a motivation of mine.
You think you've achieved that?
I have. Once in a while, I think I have. You know, I've got.
I think you've achieved it in multitudes.
Well, I don't know about that. I have some poems that are in lots of literary anthologies, and they'll probably stay there, you know, at least for a while, you know, but that's not gonna, the fact that I've achieved a little bit that way doesn't mean that I don't want to keep doing it, you know, so. Right.
So many writers you must meet, so many poets who say they want to write, they don't have the time, there's something that's sort of in the way between them and the work or between their work and the reader. How does that make you feel when people come up and sort of share that with you? And can you help them get to the other side?
A lot of people will say, I think I've got a book in me. And I'll say, well, before you get this book done, why don't you see if you can write a paragraph? I think that sort of gives them the idea of what this is all about, you know, that you have to start. And you may never write a book. But you might write two or three paragraphs, you know. I couldn't write a book. I mean, if somebody said, I want, you know, Kooser, could you write a book about rural life in Nebraska? I'd say, no way could I do that. You know, it's too big of a thing, you know. But it turned out I did write one, but I wrote it in little pieces that I didn't know was going to be a book, you know, so.
Would you read for us? You brought a poem along.
Yeah, this is a new poem, and I'm just a few days old, and it is representative of how I go about writing a poem. I saw a young man writing on the back of a garbage truck, a garbage hauler. And the gestures that he was making led me into this other thing. Arabesque. A tiny ballerina of a man, little more than a child, rides on the back of a garbage truck in t-shirt, jeans, and fluorescent chartreuse vest, hanging on to the bar, pointing one foot in its dirty sneaker, stretching the muscles in that thigh and calf, throwing his long hair back, closing his eyes, holding his face to the light, awaiting to spring down into first position, there to be joined by an older man who comes skipping around from the driver's side, the two of them now in a practice pas de deux with the orchestra swirling them on, percussion of galvanized cans, cymbals of lids, and then all the instruments joined in one thunderous clamor as the great chord in the back grinds slowly open, met by the wild applause of a thousand flies.
Just a snippet for you there from the In the Moment archives. Ted Kooser. We spoke at the South Dakota Festival of Books in 2016 in Brookings. You can search for Ted Kooser and SDPB online to find the full conversation. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. This hour, a new installment of SDPB's Summer with the Symphony. It's a series of performances from the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. Today, the final movements from Gustav Mahler's Symphony No. 3. Before we hear the music, here is Maestro Delta David Geyer.
Mahler said a symphony must contain the whole world. And it's never truer than for this third symphony of his. It's his cosmology. It's evolutionary. You could also think of it as the first chapter of Genesis, and the first movement being creation itself. And he had originally had titles for each of the movements, and the second movement was What the Flowers of the Field Tell Me. Third movement was what the Creatures of the Forest Tell Me. These last three movements, 4, 5, and 6, they take us on a spiritual journey. I would say it begins with this fourth movement, which is the alto soloist is introduced, and the text that she's singing is by Friedrich Nietzsche. It's called Midnight Song, and it's from his work, also Sprach Zarathustra. Mm-hmm. It's a cautionary tale. The first words in it are, "O humanity, take heed. What does the deep midnight say? I slept, and I woke as if from a dream." It's an admonition to humanity to be careful. It ends, however, though, with hope. The alto sings, "But all desire yearns for eternity." It's an abstract text, but Mahler sets it so wonderfully, and Maggie sings it so beautifully. It's interesting. It's kind of sparse in the orchestra. It's the most difficult movement to put together. You know, and there's just a lot of subtlety to it, a lot of exposure for the orchestra. So it's really beautiful. It begins and ends very quietly, and then, in that moment, in between, and that silence, we hear bells ringing, and we hear a chorus of young women up in the balcony singing "Bim Bom Bim Bom," along with a chime. It's the original title of the movement was "What the Angels Tell Me." And it's based on a traditional German-Austrian song, "Es sungen drei Engel." Three angels sang a heavenly song. It's for women's chorus and children's choir, this movement, plus the alto soloist. And in the middle of this movement, the alto soloist comes in, and she's playing the role of Saint Peter. And The rejoicing that's happening in heaven is that Peter has been restored and forgiven of his sins. It doesn't make reference to his denial of Christ. And honestly, theologically, it gets things a bit out of order because it talks about them being at the Last Supper. So Peter has yet to deny Christ, but yet he's being restored in this song. So theologically, it's a little questionable. I always say that artists make bad philosophers and even worse theologians. but nonetheless, it's a joyful thing about Peter's being restored to Christ the last bell rings, and as it dissipates, the string orchestra begins the last movement, which is a glorious adagio, which Mahler is famous for, his adagios. And it's basically a big hymn. It listens that way for sure. And originally the title was What Love Tells Me. At one point in the score, in that last movement, Mahler writes, Father, look upon my wounds. Let no creature be lost. Mm. So there's pain in this movement, as well as just beauty. It ends gloriously, really gloriously. But there's pain in this movement. And as we know, if we love someone deeply, there's pain involved, mm. You know. I had an experience with this piece. I was in New York City fairly soon after I moved there. And I'd studied in master classes with Leonard Bernstein at Tanglewood. And Bernstein came to the New York Philharmonic in the first couple of years I lived there to do the Mahler's second and Mahler's third symphony, and they were recorded. And I was able to go to all of those rehearsals and performances. And it was a very influential time for me to be involved in that. But I remember the dress rehearsal for this symphony. I had to leave the hall. I think I just went to the bathroom. But I came back in, and they just started this last movement. And it's like I couldn't even move. I sat down on the floor in the middle of the hall, and I just wept for the whole movement. It was just so, and there was nobody else in the hall, you know? This was just the music. They weren't playing for an audience. Hmm. I experienced this many times with the Philharmonic, you know, Mazur with a Schumann symphony or something, where it just, the magic clicks, and you just, nobody cares whether there's an audience or not. You know, we're creating this art, and, you know, that's the point. It was just so devastatingly beautiful. And after the rehearsal, Bernstein always traveled with this entourage of people. And so I was there in this room with a bunch of people, and he was talking about what had just happened. And he said, somebody give me an adjective to describe that last movement. Mm-hmm. He's casting about, and he says, Geyer, give me an adjective for that movement. And I don't remember what I said. And he said, no, it's painful. It's painful, this movement. He absolutely exemplified it, you know. And Bernstein, he related so deeply to Mahler. I mean, he was Jewish, as Mahler was Jewish, and Bernstein was really quite responsible for the revival of Mahler in the mid 20th century, because mm-hmm. people weren't playing Mahler. You know, he basically lay fallow for about 50 years.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you had some of his disciples that, you know, that were playing some of his works. But Bernstein really was the one who brought it to the fore. Even in Vienna, Bernstein brought, you know, Mahler more to the fore. It wasn't just New York. Those of us who were privileged to be there and be part of that era, It was pretty darn exciting.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. For today's Summer with the Symphony, Gustav Mahler's Symphony No. 3, performed by the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra and recorded live at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls. Here are movements 4, 5, and 6.
Thank you.
Today's Summer with the Symphony has us closing out Mahler's Symphony No. 3 with the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you from all of us at SDPB. We thank you for listening.